Going to be recording the meeting. And it is 7:31. I will turn it over to Guy.
Okay, let's see if I can figure out how. I just did this a minute ago. Let's hope I can do it again. Nope, that's not going to work. Then go back to Zoom and I will try to share my screen, which is this one. Okay, and now we can go, I hope. All right. Go. There we go. Can y'all see that?
So we're
So
seeing,
welcome everybody.
we're
We had a
actually
nice.
seeing the sort of kind of sort of the preview one. So you might want to either switch or make them the same. Go hit
There they
display
get.
settings at the top of your screen. See where it
Yeah,
says
what?
in your PowerPoint, hit display settings. See up there at the top of your PowerPoint.
Right there.
Oh, well, he doesn't see it.
I don't see what you're seeing.
All right, hit escape.
Right.
All
What do you
right.
want me to do now?
All right, so the problem is that you were seeing your full screen with the slide. We were seeing the slide and then the preview. So somehow you have to
Fooey.
figure out how to switch that. Maybe go to.
Okay, I'm going to try it one more time.
Yep.
Okay,
You need to go to
you're seeing,
slideshow.
yeah, it's not very long. It's
Okay.
just
Most
welcome. We got
arrived.
announcements. Prasad is going to give a talk. Okay. So the announcements, Jay, you've given us the schedule, right? For Exploring the Sky. It starts in April, right?
Yeah, I've given I did I give it to you, Elizabeth?
I believe I saw an email about it, but if it came after the 22nd of December, I haven't quite
Okay.
processed
Well,
it yet.
okay, I'd like to send it again.
okay. Thank you.
I haven't. It's just a matter of I've been distracted with other family issues and haven't gotten to it.
Serious family issues. I mean, you
Yeah.
know, elderly relative in some way, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've gone through that. Yeah, my concern. Sidewalk Astronomy is going to be tomorrow. January 11th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. We'll be at the corner of Mount Pleasant Street and Irving Streets. And if you want to hear about when we're going to go, because we do it, you know, roughly once a week, here's the QR code for it. And science and STEM fairs. Milt, do you want to say something?
Yeah, just that apparently the science fair question was left off the questionnaire this year, so we'll be sending out the list we used last year, asking people to participate, and I will try and make contact with the local schools to find out when they're having science fairs. But if you if anybody here's about a science fair that I should know about. Please let me know. It's mjroney@starpower.net.
Thank you. Telescope Lending Library. So we've got stuff made by Tasco a long time ago when they were not terrible, all the way up to 12 inch. These are all manuals, except for two of them. The one that Gil Funk has, he's the custodian of, and there's another one that Ted Avraham is in charge of, and those are both at least partly, this one's motorized and this is computerized. And they haven't had a whole lot of use. Let's see what else. If you want to join our listserv, just send an email to Capital Astronomers plus subscribe at groups.io. And Jim, do you want to talk about the
Yes,
assistant?
We've been missing an assistant secretary treasurer for quite some time. We had one over the summer. Unfortunately, he has had to leave the area. And I would put emphasis on the word assistant because most of the work has been, is really the treasurer's job, in which is I've been taking care of. It's not really something to split. What we need is an assistant who's a backup. So if I get hit by a bus tomorrow or something like that, somebody else will be able to access our bank accounts and be able to pick up membership lists and things like that. So if anybody would like to volunteer or knows of somebody who would make a good candidate, please let us know.
Thank you. About the Eclipse classes, bad news. Thanks to the tariff stuff, we sent 5 or 6,000 Eclipse classes to some people, Astronomy Club in Tunisia. I gave a numerical value that they're worth 50 cents each. These were used. Sounds about right. The customs wanted 50% of their value. And that works out to, several thousand dollars. It only costs, a couple hundred dollars to send them. So they're just sitting there in limbo. So another thing to thank trade wars and the current administration for. Okay, other astro clubs. Anybody want to make announcements? Novak is having their meeting tomorrow afternoon, and they're going to be talking about remote installed astronomy. The guy giving the talk actually made his first telescope in the National Capital Astronomers workshop when it was at American University. Who else would like to say something from some other astronomy club?
Well, NCA is part of the Night Sky Network, and people can always go on that and maybe get information. I try to keep that up. I should post NCA information on that more regularly. The other thing is they occasionally have talks, that sort of thing, and I try to post those on for NCA members, but NCA members are certainly willing to join to join that also.
Okay. And Sue, did you have announcements from Green Belt Club? Well, she was there. Okay. I think that's all I got. Oh, yeah. On February 14th, our next talk is going to be by Frank Summers of the Space Telescope Science Institute. And we've already talked about that. So I'm going to stop sharing and turn it over to Brian, our
All right.
vice president, so he can introduce Prasad, who, by the way, let me just give a little personal background because I've known Prasad for quite some time. He made a mirror and telescope in the telescope making workshop. He'll have to tell you what he made, because I don't recall. I made a very nice one. Then he came back and he decided he wanted to make a Crayford focuser. So he taught himself how to do that, and he'd already had quite a bit of machining skills, but he used two of our metal lathes. One was made in the middle of World War II. The other one is a little bit more modern, made in Austria, and made this beautiful Crayford focuser. And then he went on to doing stuff with something called OnStep. And OnStep is a way of basically replacing whatever motor and drive you might have had inside a telescope that no longer functions anymore, because that's what happened to the drives of a lot of telescopes. They stop working. And so some people figured out a way of, redoing that. Somebody really smart whose name escapes me at the moment. What's his name? Prasad, the guy who figured out.
Who's that?
behind. What's his name?
I don't know who you mean.
The inventor of OnStep.
Oh, Howard Dutton.
Howard Dutton, right. Thank you. And other people did other stuff. So he then helped me later on after he had shown me some work that he had done on some small telescopes, and then I and some other people at Hopewell Observatory rebuilt that drive using OnStep and a whole lot of assistance from Prasad and a bunch of other people. So thank you very much, Prasad, and I'm going to shut up and let Ryan give a proper introduction.
Oh, it's all good, Guy. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It's always a pleasure when we get to hear from one of our own, and tonight is no exception. Many of you know Dharma Prasad Oscarhart, more commonly known as Prasad, from his thoughtful posts on the NCA email list, where he regularly shares the remarkable results of his workbench and solar imaging sessions. And that's no hyperbole whatsoever. He's truly remarkable in terms of some of the imaging that he's been able to produce and share with us. Prasad brings to our community the curiosity of an engineer and the hands-on spirit of a true amateur telescope maker. After a long career in the elevator and escalator world, he turned his retirement into a launchpad for a second life in amateur astronomy. Over 16 years with NCA, he's built not only an impressive 8-inch Dobsonian, crafted, as you heard, under the guidance of Guy Brandenburg, our president, and was honored with second place for optical performance at Stellafane, but also a growing
Wow.
list, excuse me, a growing collection of solar imaging instruments of his own design. His journey from white light solar observing to H-alpha imaging, and now on to constructing and operating his own do-it-yourself spectroheliograph on a homemade harmonic drive mount, is the kind of inventive, persistent, and joyful exploration that inspires the rest of us. We're grateful to have him as a member of the club, and even more grateful that he's willing to share his experience and ingenuity with us tonight. Please join me in welcoming Prasad. Over to you, Prasad. All right. All right. Is
Excellent.
it showing?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Okay. It's working. I'm not forgotten. All right. Good evening, everyone. And thanks for letting me in on this. Just to add to what Brian said, I want to say that, I have been I enjoy making my own things than trying to observe things from a bought out some store bought item equipment. So that's what I have been doing. That's what I enjoy doing. So coming to this, the sun, for some reason, I've been a visual observer, and I wanted to avoid imaging. So I did that way and started looking at the easiest one to look at, the sun, where I don't have to worry seriously about tracking or anything. I can easily track it and so on. So that's how I've been, my interest has been with on sun. So how about, but I'm not the first one to look at sun. 300 BC, people were looking, Aristotle and Plato were looking at the sun. Galileo and Thomas Harriot observed sunspots. And one, before I say anything more on this about the history, I'm quoting here a few historical things which I have found by doing some research on the internet. So I may not always be correct on this, so forgive me if you find something is wrong, and let me know what it is, and I will update accordingly. Sun is not new to us. It's been going on for a long time. They even recognized the 11-year solar cycle. A husband and wife team Annie and Edward Maunder. They famously called a period as Maunder Minimum because there were no sunspots during that 70-year period. William Herschel detected infrared radiation, and Richard Carrington observed the butterfly diagram. The famous butterfly diagram is what you see there on the screen there, and that repeats every 11 years. And there is something more. It's not just 11 years. There is something that goes on for another one, a 100-year cycle. It's called a Gleisberg cycle. That is something new even to me. So we have now 150-year-old long record of sunspots, group areas, the butterfly diagrams, and now we are coming to the spectroheliograph. Way back in 1819, Ellery and George Ellery Hale invented the spectroheliograph. And it's an instrument that captures the image of the sun at a single wavelength of light. So wavelengths are going from picked up from the Fraunhofer lines. And all the visible lights, the lines are dark lines because they are caused by the absorption of light by the chemical element. But the solar radiation also includes some emission lines which are bright and they are not easy to detect. Way back in 1929, George Ellery Hale captured this image of an active sunspot. Now, coming to me, I bought my solar filter way back in 1998. And then recently, after the eclipse, the famous American eclipse, I bought my Lunt H alpha telescope. It was mostly sitting in its box until I got my first camera. It was a color camera, and then I started looking at it through the camera. I then moved on to a black and white or a monochrome camera, and then a Herschel wedge and solar film filters. And so on. Here are a couple of images which I got captured with my Lunt. And this is with the granules image for the first time with my not H alpha, it is through the black and white camera. I wanted more sun. And what do I do? Calcium K? Well, it's about almost $2,000. Or I go for a low-cost calcium filter with other thing, and that's what this is. No good. So nothing. I was not happy at the end of this. So what were my options? White light filters. It's limited. H alpha telescope, I already have. A single stage Athlon, yeah, it gave me a bandwidth of 0.6 angstrom units, but not good enough. Double stacking, yes, I got a double stack unit, and it gave me a little better things. In fact, the image which I had just shown is through that. Calcium K. Daystar charges almost 18 grand. And it's always limited to single, and I don't have that kind of money to spend $18,000. So what do I do? Think of an SHG spectrohelioglossal, EY. Narrower bandwidth, yes, that will give you better images. And the whole disk view, unlike the what I got, what I was getting with through a Barlow, a good resolution and relatively low cost compared to Etalon-based devices. And the best part was any wavelength of my choice. Fraunhofer lines. So these are all the lines at which we can watch the sun, starting from C, which is the hydrogen alpha, B, which is sodium, F, that is again another hydrogen, K and H, they are the calcium. So these are the important lines, and these are all the absorption lines. And you also have what they call the emission lines, which are not visible on this. In fact, there is just over here, there is the famous helium line, and that's not visible on this. All these lines are possible to be seen or viewed through spectrohelioglossal. Entire solar spectrum becomes available to me, and no extra investment needed for each and every wavelength. But the catch was that the other hand was steep learning curve, the learning curve, and that's my experience. Well, spectrohelioglossal is not new. It's been around for 125 years. Now, the next three slides are taken from a presentation made by Dr. Douglas Smith of London. He has been my guide in this spectrohelioglossal project. I also use his free software to generate and reconstruct solar images from what I capture through my spectrohelioglossal. So he describes in this the brief history of spectrohelioglossal, and including Hale as the main person who first person who invented or the for the first one who created that spectrohelioglossal. And it describes here briefly how a modern telescope can be or a refractor can be used to scan either in right ascension or declination axis at rate like 8 times or 20 times the sidereal rate. And then the data is analyzed through in a form of SER, recorded in the form of a SER video file. 300 megabytes, not really. To me, it's always been 2 to 3 gigabytes each one. So now, going to the early spectrohelioglossal, and this is the one that was the one on the left that you see is the one what was made by George Hale. If you see here, there is a slit here, and the slit, the sun is focused on the slit, and it goes here, and here is this, of course, there is a lens here. And then there is here a grating, and the reflected grating through another lens gets focused on a photographic film or a, I don't know what you call it, paper there. And so the slit moves through hydraulics, the slit moves, and accordingly, in synchronization with the slit, the paper also moves here. So as a result, you get the scan. This is how it was done way back about 125 years ago. And this is the French version in 1906. And these were the images that they got. This is in 1906, Mount Wilson Observatory, calcium. And this is the white light. Now, recent developments. A guy in France, Daniel, I don't want to pronounce his name, I'll mispronounce it. So, Daniel made the first one in 2002. Ken Harrison. Ken Harrison is an Australian. He has been experimenting with this and since 2003. He has published several books on the spectroheliograph. Then 2010, John, he's one of my friends in New York State. So he has been playing with the spectroheliograph. Then Peter Zettner, whom I have not known. But he is no longer there now. He has passed away recently. The best inf or the most work was done by Christian Buhl and Valerie Denault. That's a team they're building in. They're French people. They developed something called SOLEX or Solar. I don't know what is it. X for experiment, whatever. So that's a 3D printed spectroheliograph, and Valerie has also come out with the software to analyze it. She calls it INTI or INTI. And my guide, Doug Smith, he made a four board spectroheliograph in London. And he also has generated, he has produced this software, which I use. And many of you might have seen the article in the Sky and Telescope in September 2025. That is by Richard, he calls himself Sun Rick on the internet. Then 2024, we have the commercially sold a spectroheliograph from Vietnam by a guy by name Minh. And that's the only spectroheliograph commercially sold. It's ready out of the box. How does the spectroheliograph work? The light from the sun comes here, passes through the telescope, and passes off, gets focused right on the slit. So the slit has to be really good, capable of withstanding all the heat. Then the light from the slit passes through what we call as the collimator lens, becomes parallel and falls on the diffraction grating, gets reflected in different colors or different lines, passes through the next lens, which focuses it on the camera sensor. So that's about it. One, two, three, four are the four items. Two lenses, one grating, and one slit. Of course, then we add a camera and the telescope. Now, Ken Harrison, the Australian guy, he has been working on spectroheliographs. He produced the worksheet for calculations or for designing. I use this worksheet extensively when I wanted to design or when I was designing. So your input information of your telescope, the month of the telescope, when it is going to be used, because it gives the diameter of the sun. Then the collimator lens, the camera, the slit, and the grating. So, for the given region of interest, it tells you what you can see. Now, My DIY spectroheliograph, I use a slit which is 8 micrometer or 8 microns wide and 13 millimeter tall. And this is the slit which is made of quartz. And on the top, it is protected by this aluminum. And I got it from Dr. Doug Smith. Now, I was just saying the slit gets the sun gets focused on the slit. So, and I'm see, this is what happens when the focused sun falls on. This is a 3D printed part, and this is what happened. It happened to my first one. I'll come to that bit later, and I have replaced it with the aluminum. So then second part I got for my spectroheliograph is a 50 millimeter by 50 millimeter, 2400 lines per millimeter visible reflective grating. Now, this is probably the most expensive part in my spectroheliograph. It cost me something like $400. And one word of caution about this grating: the grating surface must never, never be touched by fingers. You have to handle it entirely by touching it or holding it at the edges. If it is touched, it's gone. You have to just throw it away. Okay, then I bought two lenses from eBay. These are the old screw mount camera lenses. Super Takumar, they are Pentax screw mount, and both lenses are 135 millimeter at f3.5. I got them in almost near perfect condition, cost me about $100 or so. Now, this is how I have laid out my spectroheliograph. The two lenses are placed here at an angle of 30 degrees. This is the reflective grating. The light from the sun passes, the slit is somewhere here. Somewhere here is the slit. So the light through from the slit gets focused on to through the passes through the parallel rays, come and fall on the grating, get reflected, and there is a camera here. So this entire, though, you can see here, this is the camera, the lens clamp. And this is what I call as a light seal or a friction grip. I call it friction grip because it allows me to focus the lenses. You know, when I focus the lenses, this portion of the front end of the thing moves forward or backward. So I cannot clamp it tightly there. I have to make it a little loose. So what I did was I made a 3D printed fixture for that and placed some what am I sorry friction clamp. So I used some felt strip on that. So you can see here in this area there is this felt. So that gives me the light seal. So this is a three-dimensional view of what I was just talking about. So this is the enclosure for the light sealed portion. The grating is here. The collimator lens is here. And slit is inside this. Slit is inside this aluminum. And this is the camera lens. And these two are the light seals or the light friction grips. And the camera here. The light passes from the slit. Light gets focused on the slit inside here and passes through the lens, falls on the grating, and gets reflected to the camera. Now, adjustment. The slit has to be vertical or vertical to the plane here. It's not for just for the photo. I've kept it intentionally. I turned it around, and we will soon be talking about adjusting it. Now, the first adjustment is the camera and the lens. Go back here. This is the camera and the lens. In fact, this does not have to be done in situ. You can take it out, and that's what I did. I took the combination of this, and just make sure that the system can be focused, the camera lens can be focused, and there is enough focus movement on on both sides of the point. So the collimator focus is the most difficult one. So the slit has to be vertically positioned, and the lens has to be focused on that. I will just show you in the next slide. One moment. Are you able to see it?
Yes, it's coming through.
Okay. I'm focusing here, the rough focus and anything, and finally it's now near a good focus. Then I, at this point somewhere, I begin to turn the slit to make sure that the slit is horizontal. So it is nearly horizontal on the anything. So how do I get back?
You might be able to minimize that.
Ah, just trying to. Yeah, okay. All right, okay. I think I'm okay though. One moment. All right, so when I at this point I reduce my exposure and also the camera gain, the line gets to somewhere to this level, and that's what I want. Now, at this point, I start using I use sharp cap, by the way. I use this crosshair function or the feature, and make sure that the line I get here is really horizontal as accurately as possible. So, and it was all done at what they call as the diffraction order zero. Now, if you see here, this is now a fully assembled spectroheliograph, and here is my pointer. And so without touching the great diffraction grating, I set my pointer at zero, at this diffraction order zero. So once I have done that, my spectroheliograph is kind of calibrated. So now I can, once it is tightened, I can move the pointer to any of this area, which is the diffraction order one. So this is where I start getting the colorful lines. If I have a color camera, I would see color. If I use a monochrome camera, so I see only black and white lines. Now, my spectroheliograph is ready. So we still have a couple of more adjustments to do. I install a UV ultraviolet infrared filter at the front end to protect the slit from heat damage to an extent. It's even though it's quite capable of withstanding good amount of heating. So, by the way, this is my mount. This is the mount I made using harmonic drives or harmonic reducers. And it uses on step. And I've been able to make a few more mounts, convert them to go to using on step. Anyway, that's another story. So this is my setup. Spectroheliograph is mounted on the telescope and it's pointing at the sun. So once I focus the camera on the spectroheliograph, I get these lines. These lines are quite sharp, but you can see here the edges are not sharp. And now these lines sh get and made sharper by adjusting the camera focus. Go back here. Okay, this is the camera, and this is the camera focusing, and this is the collimator. We don't touch this. So now I have a focuser on the telescope. Now this is where that comes in. When I turn the telescope focuser slowly and slowly, both the edges get sharper and sharper. And at one point they become like a knife edge sharp. Now at this point, what I do is I turn my camera and make it vertical, or this line becomes horizontal. That's what I have done here. If you see here, it's not truly horizontal, but this is vertical. These edges are vertical, so my camera is ready and the slit needs slight tilting. It's a strange thing. When I turn the slit, you will see only this changing, but not the vertical edges. So these are all something new that I saw. And by the way, this the line, what you see here, if you see it is slightly curving upwards. And in spectroheliograph terminology, we call it the spectroheliograph SHG smile. And the smile points this way, and the blue is up, red is down. So blue is ultraviolet and red is infrared. So different lines, this is what I get. It's a GIF, so I can't stop it. All right. No, I can't stop it. So these are all the different lines. I had to focus for each ones. By the way, the two dark lines that you see, this one is are the calcium lines. And this is the hydrogen alpha. Now, I'm almost ready. My slit is almost properly adjusted. Doesn't have to be so perfect. And I have the region of interest. This is the hydrogen alpha line. And this is my region of interest sitting in my camera, which is roughly, in my case, I use about 2200 or 2300 wide by 120 high. So it's a very narrow, very wide, very narrow in height and very wide in width. Now, I'm now going to talk about further focusing of this. So two items, I call them shark teeth. I'll show you what I mean by shark teeth. and also what I call as scintillation lines. They may not be the right terms, but I could not think of anything different. Now, this is the ROI, or region of interest selection, in sharp gap. And in this particular case, I have used 2400 by 120. And typically, we can use this width for 120. The width is always 2400 for my spectroheliograph, but the height may vary. Now, if you see here, this is when it is correctly focused. You can see these are what I called as the shark teeth. I'm going to once again take a break and show you a couple of MP4s. You can see the shark teeth in this.
Can I ask what the
Now,
shark teeth are from?
I'm sorry?
What causes the shark teeth?
Oh, these are this is the shark teeth, or what is the signal, or the signal that we get from the sun. When you talk about hydrogen alpha has a certain particular wavelength, but the details are on the body of the sun is what causes that. There are always ups and downs, and I'll come to that. This is what's going to give us the Doppler image and things like that. I don't know if I was clear enough.
That's good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. So my spectroheliograph is now mounted, and this is another on-step Vixen GP mount driven by OnStep. So I have my voting booth here. The laptop is inside and connected to the spectroheliograph. Now, the spectroheliograph has to be perfectly aligned along the either of either the right ascension or declination axis. So if it is not, it's going to give us a little problem. I will show you that. And we do the scanning it 8 times, 16 times, 20 times, or whatever, or anything, as long as the system supports. And when you go up on the scan speed, you also need higher frames per second. So I typically do with my current setup. My setup today has 8 and 20 X, so I don't have 16 in this case. So I do it at 8 or 20. I prefer to do it at 20 because it is shorter. The scan the duration is scan is shorter. At 20x, I scan at something like 260, 270 frames per second, and my camera setup supports that as long as the ROI is narrow. But when it comes to helium, I need a much wider or taller region of interest, so I don't get that speed. So I do it at 8 times. So what I do is I take the sun is focused on the slit. So I move the mount, or move the telescope, or the pointing away from the sun. So I get a dark screen. and I move it sufficiently away so that, you know, I know it gives me some time to push the buttons. And so I do everything manually. People are doing it with the through scripts, but I don't. So I begin scanning at the speed 820x, for example, and suddenly the sun appears on the slit, and I continue scanning until the sun disappears. I stop the capture and press the reverse button and scan again. So I keep scanning up east and west and east and west and like that several times, something like 16 or 20 scans. And before I decide to change the wavelength to a different one. I'm now going to show you what I capture. It was a cloudy day when I caught this, but you're doing it for this presentation or for the presentation I was preparing. So this is what the first one I captured. Again, this is you can see now the sharp teeth and all in this so much better. I suppose you can see here shark teeth. By the way, I want to show you one more thing. Now, if you see here, over here, there is a line. And as it moves, that line is not changing. This line stays that way. Certainly it's not a part of the sun. So in spectroheliograph terminology, this is what we call the transverse ilium. I've already talked about the shark teeth, and I want to show you another one to show the flares. Now, I want you to observe this very carefully. Look, 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 look here. I'll run it again for the second time. Yeah.
Can you explain what just
Yeah,
happened?
exactly. That's what I want to do. Thank you. That was an active solar flare. The solar flare, some of it may be coming towards the Earth, and some of it is not really coming towards the Earth. So that is what it was showing. And my scanning was passing through that solar flare. The coronal mass ejection, it is being, you know, it's moving. Some of it may be coming towards, you know, it's on the blue side, means coming towards us, which is on the upper side. So that was coming towards us. So that's what it is. I don't know if I was clear, but sorry. All right, so we have got some scans. Now, next thing what I have to do is use one of these software to generate the solar images. And I prefer the Smith's version, Dr. Doug Smith and his son. They are the ones who authored this software. I believe it was based on originally by the Inti, but they made some improvements. For some reason, I prefer this. Doesn't have any bells and whistles, but unlike the other two, Inti and JSON-X, I've got lots of bells and whistles, automatic coloring, and you name it, it's all there, but I don't use them. So the opening screen comes here. I've got to again, I'm sorry. Now the software is generating the images. It is literally assembling the scan, frame by frame, and putting it together. Here is the image we just generated from the scan. Same with the. Okay, it has done that. And it also gives some additional information. For example, this is the raw uncorrected image. And I was my scan the frames per second was not truly as it was required. So as a result, you can see the width is slightly larger than the height, and it gets corrected. The software does the correction. And another thing here is the angle. See, the angle is the edge detection determines the angle, and if the angle is It's not is if it is not perfectly in alignment, it will tell us. If you see here, my angle was quite good in this. It is less than a degree off, and Y to X ratio was 0.9, which is also good enough.
Since you're screen sharing, just
I'm sorry, yeah. I was on the wrong. There's one more new term that I learned is a CLAHE, contrast limited adaptive histogram equalization. So, Lucky Imaging, the SHG version. Planetary imaging, we do a lot of Lucky Imaging. We take a series of scans or images in the video form, analyze it using software like AutoStackert. But no, it doesn't work here because we take scans of slices, put them together, and But there is a SHG version of Lucky Imaging. You take lots of scans and analyze these images one by one and take the best few and put them together and stack them. I don't think I want to do this now. I mean, so a few points that I learned as a G is focusing is the most difficult or a critical activity. If I don't give good attention to it, I get a terrible image. So mastering the focusing is most important. Collimator focus requires great attention, but done only once. And once you do it, you just leave it alone. You don't have to touch it. Camera focus should be as sharp as possible. Good care is taken, and I use histogram stretch. The telescope focus is for maximum shark teeth and scintillation. Telescope must have a motorized focuser. I use a DC, and I'm soon planning to switch over to a stepper motor. So it's extremely sensitive to all adjustments which I just talked about, and it has to be perfect in everything, or else the results are no good. Seeing conditions make great difference. I use different software to know how good is are my seeing conditions. And astrospheric and is one of them. I depend entirely on that. There is one more also, Meteo Blue. It's a French one. It's not so popular here in the US. Doug Smith's heliograph, and he used entirely foam. The whole thing is made of foam. Of course, I think he has got bottom side is not foam. It must be some solid something, board of some kind, I guess. This is I copy pasted it from his post, and it's in. By the way, he does the scanning in declination axis. And mine is always right ascension. And so far, I've been talking to you about my own spectroheliograph, which is really my second spectroheliograph. Let me talk a little about my first one. So, sometime in 2023, I heard about spectroheliograph and about SOLEX. Got some parts from a company called Chaliac, which is quite famous in France. I tried doing my 3D printing, didn't go well, so finally I got a 3D printed kit from France. It was great to look at, but it had lot of issues, and I had issues with my own learning because I was going through the learning curve. So I also had any problem with my mount, the Exos 2 Go 2 mount. That was no good. That had issues. So I switched over to Vixen GP with the OnStep, and that worked so much better. And this is what that Solex looks like. Beautiful to look at, but has issues. If you see here, this is the collimator side. The collimator focusing is done by literally by moving, adjusting this portion by hand. So I adjust it, and because of the slackness, when I tighten the screws, my adjustment is gone. It's no more in focus. So again, I try adjusting it. Again, the same story. So I was struggling with it. Solex uses 25 millimeter lenses, and 2400. This also uses 2400 lines per millimeter, the same kind of a thing. But weight, because it is 3D printed, it's just only about 700 grams, about half the weight of my spectroheliograph. The the imported enclosure looks great, but I was not happy. I'm not happy. Lot of learning curve with that, and I had to, I couldn't get support from the French group, or probably the language barrier, I don't know. I tried my best to use Google Translator, it didn't work. So finally I found two local meaning local within the US. One of them was John Palladini. I have mentioned about him, and he's an old-timer in this. And both other the my second friend is also by name John. He's in somewhere in Arizona. So, few last points on the spectroheliograph. It's a hard disk hungry. It hogs hard disk space. My laptop, the one I'm using right now, had a 500 gigabyte hard drive. So it was just not enough. The space in that was not enough. I have replaced it now with a 4 terabyte hard drive, solid state, and that's now helping me. It's anything. So each day, I may consume about 300 to 600 gigabytes of for my scans. And then I need a lot more for post-processing when I take my everything home, indoors. So before I step out on any day, I clear my hard disk space, and I try to maximize my hard disk space. And I already talked about the Lucky imaging. It's a different kind of a thing. You make a series of scans, and then somehow, not exactly Lucky imaging, but helps reduce noise. Weight of spectroheliograph adds on the focuser, and it works on the focuser and its flexure. That's a little problem, because the focuser, it may not even be possible to turn the focuser knob in some cases. I had that problem with one of my focusers. One of the other, the previously, whatever I was using in the past, the current one, I'm able to get over that. So, seeing conditions matter a lot. The jet stream speed or the velocity, I know if 25 meters per second or lower than that, I seem to get better images. But if it is, some days it is 40, 50, or even higher. Speed, and it is terrible. So, okay, this is what I'm, these are some of my results, what I have been doing. Hydrogen alpha, and this is calcium K. Hydrogen alpha and hydrogen alpha. Same again, different types of processing. And if you see here, these are the same. No, these are not same. Next one. Okay, this is the Doppler shift. You can see in this side, the blue side is certainly blue because it is approaching us. It is rotating. The sun is turning. This side is approaching us. This side is going away. And the same thing here with the artificial eclipse version, which is produced. This image is mainly to show highlight the prominences. Another one, and if you, in this one in particularly, I want to show you here. See what's happening on these prompts. These prompts are red because they are going away from us. Whereas this side, the edge of this is going away, but the prompt here is glowing towards the Earth. I hope you're able to see that. This edge here is approaching us, or it's moving in our direction. but the prompts are moving away from us. These are all the things you can see only through a spectroheliograph. You can't see through a regular hydrogen alpha telescope. Hydrogen beta, calcium H, and calcium K. This is helium. Helium is something new to me, and I have to mention here, Daystar sells a helium D3 quantum filter. It's priced something like $18,000, and I spent less than $1,000 on my spectroheliograph, and I'm able to get decently good. I don't know how good this is, what kind of images it produces, but I just don't have that kind of money. I have shared this previously, same set pair of images I've shared. This is from Solar Dynamics Observatory. This is not what I this is not my image, but this is my image. I was talking about helium, and this is the helium line is a bright line. You cannot see it, you know, when it is fully wide. So I made it here a little narrow at the end of that scan to highlight this. I'm going to show you a GIF file. Now watch carefully on this, somewhere here. Look at that. Look at that, look at that. That's the helium line. That's the helium line. These are the sodium D1, sodium D2. My next plans, I want to harness this Z-Man effect. It's about think of an MRI that you get, you know, MRI in a hospital. Think of that. That also uses the magnetic field. And this is the magnetic field from sunspots. And this image is not mine. This is from SDO. And I'm not ready. I am still working on this. It is my next project. I hope to have it maybe another month or two. I hope to work on get things ready for that. And what next after that? Solar corona. Yeah, again, this is from Wikipedia, and this is not mine. This is probably my. I hope to generate this, not as good as this, but probably somewhat visible solar corona. So this will probably follow my and Z-Man effect or that. And thank you, everyone. Thank you. And I'm now open for any questions.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Good stuff.
It was fantastic for Seth.
Thank you.
One point on the Maunder minimum, there actually were spots, but they were single spots and small, so it wasn't zero.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember who it was who did the research, but they did look at the data during the Maunder minimum, and there were actual spots, but they were just small single spots, so the activity was there, but it was minimum.
Okay, I have a question about your device and the whole idea. Do you have to pick a particular spectral line for this, or can you just pick any old random place in the spectrum?
You can pick any line, but for example, if you want to get capture the hydrogen alpha image?
No, let's say I don't want any particular line. Just pick a random, instead of 656.26, what about 617? I have no idea what it is. I just made it up. Can you do that?
You can do that, but you won't get any detail, because
Okay.
whatever detail or the surface detail that you get on hydrogen alpha, you've got to do it only at hydrogen alpha line.
Okay.
Or if you want the helium, you have to use the helium line. Helium line is the bright line, so you don't see it. So you use a trick in that. What I do is I capture the sodium line and use the sodium D2 line, because that is a dark line, that's absorption line. So I use that, but use a very wide or a very tall region of interest. So the ROI height is very much bigger. I use something like 352 pixels and capture it, and my software really analyzes the sodium line, but it subtracts the difference between sodium and helium and uses the picks the data from that point. That is how I end up getting the helium D2 or D3 images.
Thank
It's
you.
a software manipulation.
So Guy, I think that if there's no emission lines, then there's really nothing to image on, right?
What's that?
So
Come again?
the idea is that you're trying to take a picture of the light that's actually being emitted. And so you have the different emission lines, that's where the light's getting emitted.
Well, it's also absorption lines.
No, absorption lines are very distinct and visible because they are dark. They are dark because the surrounding, the above the line it is bright, and below the line is bright. The line alone is dark. So it becomes easy to identify and easy to capture. That's the data that software normally uses. Now, what for helium, which is bright line, and its surrounding area is also bright. So your software gets confused if you try to scan there. It just cannot say where it's going to say, what am I supposed to do? That's what the software. So what we do is we tell the software to look for or to base its computation based on the dark line, which is the sodium D2 line. But don't pick the data D2 line, but pick the data something like 120 pixels away from that. It's a software manipulation. Am I clear? Sorry.
Remember, the continuum emission comes from a lower layer there on the sun, the photosphere, and the absorption lines come from a layer above that. I believe that's the chromosphere there. So, but Prasad, wonderful presentation. Thank you. Now, I was wondering, what is the cause of the smile effect? Where in the optics does that come from?
It's the smile is I believe it is smile is because of the imperfections in the camera or the lens, rather, no, not camera, the lenses. The smile or the bend, the curving of the line.
Prasad, related question for you. And I think you're absolutely right. It's caused by like barrel distortion and whatnot in the lens. How does the software account for that, so that it knows that that you have some curvature of each spectral line in the field of view?
I can't exactly answer this question because
Okay.
I have not written the software. The software takes care of that. That's all
Oh,
I
but
know.
it just works from your standpoint. You don't have
Correct.
to do anything
Yes.
special to calibrate it.
No,
Okay.
no, no.
Okay.
The
Gotcha.
only thing we can do, in fact, I just didn't want to make it just too long. It can become boring. Software, you can in the software you can always ask the software to subtract or look for, don't look for the line that you are normally designed to look, but take 5 pixels away or 10 pixels away, and you get a totally different and interesting image. And you can I do a scan for hydrogen alpha. But I can produce the same kind of image that you get through when you are looking through what do you call a broadband high, black and white the regular image the filter like 1000 Oaks filter, the kind of image. You can use the same you can produce the same kind of image using the scan that I have done for hydrogen alpha, or not just hydrogen alpha, for almost for any.
So when you were mentioning that you take like 16 to 20 scans, right, for each wavelength that you collect.
Correct.
How do you combine those results, or do you pick the best one, or how does that work?
One is I physically literally visually look at the each image
Okay.
and then try to pick a few and then use
Oh, okay.
auto stacker to further analyze and still do a next level. It takes me to the next level,
Okay. Okay,
and
gotcha.
auto stacker does the stacking. Stacking certainly helps the noise level and picture quality.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
And is that
but
partially because when you're doing the scan with the mount, do you notice that like there are slight variations in scan rate or jitters or other types of motion artifacts that negatively impact the image? Okay.
yes. When I started using my, the spectrohelioograph using my mount, which is a Explore Scientific Exos 2 GT, and that had I didn't realize in the beginning because it was giving me great images, like planetary images. I had no problem at all, so I started using it, and I was getting something like what I used to call them saw teeth. At the edge of the limbs of the sun solar image, I was getting literally like a saw blade, like saw teeth. And that was because of
I
that I
remember seeing
realized that,
that in some of your images from a while ago.
and that was because of backlash.
Interesting. Yeah, that
And
would be an issue.
once I switched over to Vixen GP mount,
No
it
problem.
just disappeared. And now I use a harmonic drive.
Okay.
Again, I made it. I've shared that information with Guy. It's a good project. It's interesting. Imagine, you have to spend $2,500 for a Redzu AM5 mount. I get the same kind of performance for $300. And no, it's not the money. It's not the money. It's the pleasure of making it.
Of doing it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. The entire, and I use OnStep in that.
Oh, fantastic.
So OnStep probably add another $100.
Did you do a talk on your harmonic mount construction also?
Yeah, today, to, Today I use only my harmonic mod.
Oh, no, I mean like today you did a talk on your solar rig. Did you do a talk on how you built the harmonic mount?
No, I have not done it. I can do it, yeah.
I have a quick question on today's talk. Is it too much trouble to ask you to bring up your diagram of that you put up where it showed the telescope connected to the to your solar rig?
The drawing
A drawing,
die,
yeah. Yeah, sure, absolutely. No problem at all. Just send me an email, so I'll send it back to you. no, I just meant just to ask this question, but
Can you bring your slides back up?
Oh, you mean, I'm sorry. Okay, sure. One moment. Okay, here.
yeah, 27, I guess, is it? Or is it way up? Maybe it's way in the beginning.
This one?
The one with the drawing where you have the parts labeled.
Oh, okay, got you. Yeah.
So when you yeah, I think this is good enough. Where when you were showing us the pictures with the shark's teeth and things, and you're tuning it, is
Yes.
that without a telescope added on to this?
No, with the telescope.
With the telescope.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to sound like a total idiot, but what was it, just your camera then that was recording that?
No, the same camera. This one.
Oh, okay, so the same camera,
Yeah.
and all right, so this is where I was getting confused, was so why weren't we seeing a picture of the sun at that point? Like, what changed between like getting a shot of the sun versus tuning it?
I don't understand.
Like when we see the shark, okay, when you showed us the pictures of the shark teeth, you pointed it at the sun. And then you were tuning it to get a, kind of the sharpest lines and the sharpest shark teeth and things, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then after that, what did you have to change after that to get an image of the sun?
I have here, you can see this is the screenshot of my sharp cap.
Yeah.
So the mount is tracking the sun, so nothing is not going to change
Oh,
significantly. Now
okay.
at this point, when I adjust the camera, these horizontal lines here may lose their sharpness, and or when I turn it again, they become sharp. I
Okay.
leave it there,
Okay.
and then at this point, at that point, I switch over to the focuser on the telescope.
I see.
So when I switch over to moving the adjusting the telescope focuser, now suddenly the shark teeth will appear, and also the scintillation lines.
Okay.
And when I go past that point, the shark teeth and the scintillation lines will disappear, or they become slightly less significant. So I turn it back. And when I feel that it is the best, I leave it there.
Okay. All right, got it. Thank you.
All
All right.
right.
Are there any more questions? Any questions on the chat?
Nope, nothing showing up there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much again. And can we all give Prasad a round of applause, either, through the emojis or whatever you call those things? Thank you very
Thank
much.
you.
That's very,
Thank
very
you.
impressive.
Thank you.
And Looking forward to learning more about all the stuff you've been doing. It's very, very impressive. So obviously there's no observing after the meeting tonight. So good night, everybody.
Have a good night. Take care.
Observatory, there wouldn't have been observing tonight.
You're absolutely correct.
So just for next month, for February, I think we're going to, some of us, our spouses are not going to be happy because it's on the 14th of February, Valentine's Day.
Uh-oh.
So for everyone, make sure that you take care of your spouses accordingly with some really special gifts and whatnot so that they'll let you attend the meeting. Okay, so, but yeah, so next month is on the 14th of February, and currently, unless extremely bad weather shows up, we will be at the observatory with a hybrid meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay,
all right.
Good night. Have a good night, everybody.
Night.
Take care.